Welcome to Fried. I'm your host, Kate Donovan. I work with leaders so they can see the patterns that are quietly hurting performance and burning out their best people. In my world, burnout is blameless, burnout is information, and burnout is a signal that we can use to improve workplaces. Seasons 1 through 10 focus on individual burnout. Seasons 11 and beyond focus on leadership, culture, and the workplace. This podcast will help you understand what burnout is pointing to and how to start fixing what's actually causing it. If this is a conversation you feel your organization should be having, that's the work I bring into teams through keynotes, workshops, and advisory. You can find all my info at katedonovan.com. That's CAITDONOVAN.com.
Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast.
Fried fam, I am very, 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 very excited today to bring to you not only a guest, but also a friend and someone whose work I respect so deeply and who has spent so much time creating useful tools for the workplace. It's just so much time. And today you get to meet her, which is the best. So Robin Hatcher once wrote for soap operas like All My Children and One Life to Live. Isn't that amazing? And acted in shows like Law and Order and The Blacklist. She's been helping leaders communicate ever since. As a keynote speaker, executive coach, and communication strategist, she's worked with companies like PayPal, Spotify, Morgan Stanley, and JP Morgan. She's a certified speaking professional, a certified NLP practitioner, and the author of Standing Ovation Presentations, where she introduces her actor types communication framework. Her approach brings the best of the stage to the boardroom, turning everyday communicators into compelling, confident leaders. Robin, welcome to Fried after all these years.
I'm so happy to be here. I'm fried at last.
So, folks, for those of you who do not know, Robin and I know each other because we are both members of the National Speakers Association New York City chapter. Robin was the president during my third year and convinced me to join the president track. So I was the president 2 years after her. So we've both, in addition to the work that we do in other workplaces, we have both led volunteer-led nonprofit organizations, which is a whole different bag of cats, folks. But one of the things that happened a couple of years ago, we were at a national conference and we were, you know, kind of sitting. This is when we take the time as speakers to really think through our messaging, talk to each other about what's working, what's not working. And it came to you, Robin, while we were there. You were like, oh my God, I used to create drama on purpose and now I help people get rid of it.
Thank you, Mary J. Blige and the treadmill.
Always. We could just say thank you to Mary J. Blige every time we start.
I know.
Whatever.
And if anybody doesn't get it, because I was on the treadmill listening to her and she was singing No More Drama. And I'm like, and that's when like everything just so sort of coalesced and went
boom. And ever since then, you had, I thought, pretty clear messaging before. I knew you were a communications expert. I knew you helped people talk to each other in better, more productive ways. I knew all of those things. But this new way of looking at your work really seems to have unlocked something in you, like beyond the work. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me what's happened since you kind of discovered this like extra key?
Well, it's very funny because it's so much around alignment and pulling everything together, you know, because a lot of times we throw the baby. And I was telling people this for years. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. What's in your past? What's your hobby? What's your stuff? All of that. I've been telling people that and helping them find it. And it took me this long for me to put it all together because it's like, you know, because you think, yeah, I was a soap opera writer, but that was then. What does it have to do with the workplace? What it has to do with anything else? So I'm just going to leave that portion of my career and life out of the picture, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Everything that you do has some connection. And the fact that I love writing, the love creative writing, and that is part of communication. And that's what was driving me for so many years to be a better communicator and to help people communicate better, all of my acting, all of my drama. So I can't throw it out. I can't like hide it. I can't pretend it didn't exist. So when it all comes together, then it's like, boom, I'm whole.
Yeah, and I remember when you said it to me, when you were like, "Oh my God, I came up with like I found it." My whole body was like, "Yes." Like, of course that's it. And what I think something that I've thought about ever since that I haven't told you. So I have folks, I have a confession session for you right now. I am very lost, maybe lost in when I'm reading books or watching TV, I'm like in the show. I'm part of what's going on. If I'm reading a book that's real long and I've been reading it for a while, I will worry about the characters as I'm going to sleep. You know, like I think about them. And I remember even as a child being so frustrated with sitcom type shows because if people would just talk to each other, they wouldn't have this big problem. And that is the underlying sort of issue in almost every sitcom, whether it's drama, whether it's comedy, whether it's dramedy, whatever the hell is going on, there's somebody that's not saying something to someone else. There's a misunderstanding, and it is the crux of the whole show. And I used to sit there as like a 7-year-old being so frustrated about why people don't talk to just tell, but if you just tell them, then they'll know and it will be fine.
I know that frustration. And the funny thing is, I'm laughing because I feel like I came to that because I was watching it in my family. So it's
Even
like
better.
you could then you see it on television. But I was watching it in my family and it was like, because I was really shy. I didn't talk. So I would listen all the time. And I'm like, well, if she had only said it that way. And you know, every time you say it this way, this happens. Why don't you get it? You know, so I was
Yeah.
sitting there this whole time as a child thinking that, and that's how I
Oh.
can now create it.
Isn't that amazing? So this to me, to you, it's like the way that you communicate with one another. To me, the thing that was always missing was this lack of willingness to understand each other. So you can sometimes clear that up with communication, right? But like to me, that was the thing that's lasted, and that was the thing that you know, I was always the friend that friends came to talk about each other to say, like, how do I fix this problem with this other friend? It's always been me. I did it my whole entire life. And the whole time, every time, I was trying to help people understand each other. And as I'm writing this new book, I'm trying to help leaders and individual contributors understand each other. Like I am going for that understanding all the time. And you are going for the correct words. Your whole life, the whole time.
And the understanding, you know, I'm totally about the understanding because I feel like that is the most important part to understand that we're all coming from it. I mean, it sounds weird because there are some really vile people out there, but we all are doing the best that we can with what we have. The problem is we don't understand what each other has
Yeah.
and what the other person needs and is trying to get in order to survive. And so it's that understanding, I feel like, that we as leaders and as people, as individuals, need to get so much more in touch with. We all are trying to survive. My method for surviving is to say it this way. Your understanding of surviving is to get hurt because I said it that way. And all of the other things that happen in between.
Yeah. And I think that we were saying this just before we started recording, or you were saying this before we started recording. You can't get very far with good communication work if you don't understand where your own stuff is coming from. So, is this part of, because this is sort of therapy, right? Like, right. It's like a little bit of therapy. Is that something that you start with when you're working with companies? Like, do you talk about that?
I do because and that's where the soap writing really plays into such a perfect analogy. Because when you're writing for soaps, you've got all these characters that you have to write for every day. But before you start writing, you have to study something that's called the show Bible. And the show Bible gives you the history of everything that's happened on the show and all the characters. And so where I start with organizations is like, your company has a show Bible. Your company has a script. Every show, like All My Children, is not like Bold and the Builder. It's not like all of the other shows. It's not like Falcon Crest, all of those other things. They have something that they want their audiences to feel or do or think when they watch the show. Your organization has the same thing as a show Bible. And within that show Bible, every character has their own show Bible. They all have their own needs, their own triggers, their own traumas. And so when you understand what your show Bible is, this is what I'm trying to do, then you have to do the work to say, okay, who is in my cast of characters? Who did we cast here? What do they need? What two people can I put in a scene and have a brilliant outcome? What two people can I put in a scene and have a totally blow up? And if you don't know that, you're in line for a lot of drama.
I love this idea of a show Bible.
Yeah.
The last a podcast episode I listened to you on, you were talking about how there's different groups of writers, and you were sort of relating one to the leaders and one to the teams. But before we get into that, I think the show Bible comes even before these two things, right? Like this is the top of the pyramid, sort of. And so I guess what this is making me think of right now is that I know of a particular global company. I have not worked with them. I just know people that have worked for them, and they are falling apart at the seams. And they are one of the largest companies in the world, and they're falling apart at the seams. And it's really difficult to watch because for a long time they were the end all be all of what they do. And one of the things that the person that I know that worked there said recently, I know I'm being really cryptic and that's not like me on this show, but I don't, this is not actually something that I can say out loud, so I have to be careful. But the person that I know that worked there said to me recently, in not those words, but they stopped following their show Bible. Like they stopped, like they had a really clear set of values and systems and things in place. They got a new CEO, global CEO, completely changed the show Bible without talking to, came
Without
in with
telling
his,
anybody, yeah.
without telling anybody, right? Came in with his own show Bible. And now nobody knows how to act. Nobody knows what their
Exactly.
scene is. Nobody knows what their role is. Everybody's confused. People are getting fired left and right. Nobody knows what's going on.
It's like having
It's
an
chaos.
unscripted show. You know, it's like it's total chaos because if you got the show, Bobby, you're then the script writers don't know what to write. So they're just like doing, well, maybe they'll throw a scene here, there's those things. And then the actors, the actual employees, they have no idea what to do. So it's like improv, and improv is really hard. You know how many times you've gone to an improv show and it is awful because everybody can't improv, you know,
It's
and
so
that's what
difficult,
happens in so many organizations. It's like all of a sudden it's like, what? What's that? That? Well, I didn't expect that line. Now what am I supposed to say? Well, now what am I supposed to do?
This is kind of heartbreaking because I feel like this is happening a lot right now. I think with AI coming in, a lot of people are like, new show Bible, AI can write it. And then everybody's real confused. And what I see happening is a lot of finger pointing. Right. So I see a lot of leaders saying, like, employees, you gotta like step up your game. Like, you're falling apart. You're all disengaged. Like, what's going on? And employees are like, leaders, you've gotta let me know what's in the show Bible. And the leaders are like, there's no show Bible anymore. We're just, and everybody's just sort of mad at each other. And we're kind of
Because people,
stuck.
yeah. And there's a lot of assumptions. That's one of the problems. It's like sometimes, and like I don't want to fault all leaders for this because we are so prone to assumptions. So they could come in and this Bible worked in this other show. It was a success. And I'm doing it. So everybody gets it, right? But they don't check because they assume that it's so clear in their head. You know, and we all do that. That's part of the problem with the communication
Yeah.
that we'll get to later. Also, we assume that somebody knows exactly what you're talking about when you say a particular thing. And they don't. You have to be clear when you're coming in and resetting the show Bible. And you know what? Fine. It's okay to rewrite a show Bible. Maybe it wasn't working. That's fine. Maybe the ratings were down, so we need to rewrite it.
Yeah.
However, you have to tell everybody. You have to tell everybody that it's been rewritten, and you have to train the cast. You have to tell the cast what's going on, or you have to recast. So that's okay too, if that needs to be. But getting back to the fact that the show Bible is to help the listeners, the end person, understand and follow the show and love the show and understand the show and come back for more and more. So part of the problem is if you just sit there and rewrite a show Bible, what is your end effect? What is your company known for? What do you want your customers, your clients, your employees to feel, think, or do because of what you are producing? And if that's not clear, and if that clarity isn't reflected in the show Bible, then everything falls apart. And that's what it sounds like is happening with this company. It's like you've lost sight of why people are tuning in.
I just love this so much. All right, so now let's go to say you have a show Bible. Show Bible is solid. Everybody gets it. Everybody's on board. Like we're into the show Bible. And then you were explaining in that episode that I listened to that there are two different scripts that have to be written. There are two different sets of writers. Can you explain that a little bit? Because I thought that was a really perfect analogy for, because people are talk, maybe I'll tell you also why I'm asking so that people that are listening understand where my head's at. Oftentimes, when we are complaining about things like burnout and disengagement and whatever, we're saying the system. We're using the word the system, and we're not necessarily like understanding that we're all contributing to the system. We're not talking about how to change the system. We're all waiting for some outside show Bible to come in and change the system. But the system is built up of the show Bible and then these other two parts. So can you talk about these two parts?
So in soap writing, most people don't understand that there are two teams of a soap writer. So there is the what's called the breakdown writer or the outline writer. And what we did was sit in a room with the head writers, and the head writers would say, "This is where the story needs to go." So you write an outline for this day in that week so that we can get to where we need to go. And then that outline goes to a script writer. And the script writer takes that outline and says, "Oh, this is where the show needs to go. I'm just going to write the dialogue and the action so that it happens." And now in organizations, we've got the SVPs, we've got the VPs, we've got the CEO. They're all the breakdown writers. And they're writing an outline for how the show is supposed to play out for that week, that month, that year, that quarter. And then the script writers have to follow that outline. And what happens is, like, and so the script writers are the employees. A lot of times, like, HR is sort of in the middle there, but they're mostly the HR, the employees that then have to follow the script. And the issue comes in is that if that breakdown isn't clear, you know, and I did both. For One Life to Live, I wrote the breakdown. For All My Children, I wrote the script. And so two things had happened. If the outline is not clear, then I'm, as a script writer, is like, I don't know what to write. You know, I could have her say this. And then it's like totally wrong, you know. Or, you know, as an employee or as a script writer, I can look at the outline and say, eh, fish, I don't like that. I'm gonna write that she goes off into the, you know, and then I've totally ruined the show. You know, so they have to work in tandem, they have to work together, and they have to be unified. The interesting part, this is the part where I really help people with, is that the most important part of all of these two parts is a third person on the team, and that is one person, and that's the editor. Now, the editor has complete power to rewrite and re-script things in the script that have gone off because they know what's in the outline, they know what's in the show Bible, and they look at the script and say, oh, Robin just took her somewhere else. I'm just going to cross this out and write it. Yeah, it's the worst thing in the world is getting back your script from the editor. It's like, how much black am I going to see today? Okay, but that's what has to happen. And where I say that we all have the power is that we all have the power to edit ourselves. You know, there is no editor in the organizational system. A lot
Unless
of
you have a
times people,
micromanager.
yeah, exactly.
And
A
you don't
lot of
want
people
that.
think, yeah. A lot of people think, oh, HR is going to take care of that. HR, no.
No.
You've got to be your own editor.
Yeah.
You've got to be your own editor and know how to edit the conversation so that it fits the outline, that fits the show Bible, and that everything can coexist.
So when I'm thinking about this as a full concept, I feel like we could keep breaking it down and keep breaking it down because there's a lot of richness in this like side by side comparison. What I'm thinking of is in my world, I'm constantly talking about leaders, this is your job, individuals, this is your job. Like we're not getting anywhere unless we're both doing it together because that's what the system is actually made up of. And so when we are at the script portion. And so we're playing our role. Maybe we're
Right.
already the actors. The script is sort of written. We're acting as individual contributors, and things go sideways. Now we're like all the way through the writing process, and we are on the recording floor in the studio. There is still a director. There is still a post-production editor. Like there's still multiple layers of
Right.
direction and editing happen. And I think that that's can be true in the workplace as well. But I think that yes, while you have to be your own editor, you also have to be okay with some editing. And that's hard. And I think people suck at it.
And that so much plays into there are people that suck on it, they're stuck at it. There are people that need it and won't do anything without it. You know, because drama, like when you think about how drama shows up in the workplace, it's feels like it's being written by a soap opera writer, but it's actually written by default because it's either written by silences, assumptions, or something else. You know, it is like, so we make all these assumptions about what that director meant when they gave me that note. And some people will say, oh my God, they hate me. And then go into that spirally thing and just shut the hell up. And never speak up and never ask for what they want or never push the boundaries. The other people will get that same direction and say, uh-uh, I'm not taking direction from you. I'm going to be passive aggressive. I am going to do my work as slowly as possible and I'm going to gossip with everybody else on the floor to tell them how bad you are. And so it could be the same directive given to different characters who will have a different reaction to it. And so that's kind of the in and out, like everything is intertwined, you know, with the communication part, because you know, burnout happens in the communication way before it happens in the processes or the behaviors that happen. You know, if you start seeing people like I had a client, you know, she was talking about how she came in and she saw one of her leaders enter and no one's said hello to each other. It's nobody. You know, that's a sign. You know, and she desperately wanted to talk to this leader about it. It's like, how could you walk in to your team and not even say hello? You know, that's going to cause a problem. You know, there may be somebody said, oh, I don't need anybody saying hello because I'm totally self-sufficient and I know that I'm doing what I'm doing. Another person sitting right next to them is like, she's not going to say hello to me. I am not going to do what I'm supposed to do. And the other one is just going to get
Why didn't she
so
say hello to
wrapped
me? Does
up.
she hate me?
So wrapped up in that they can't do anything.
Let's go into silence causes drama. This was one example, the not saying hello. I think that the majority of people have never learned how to self-advocate and how to speak up. Like, we were goofing with my mother and my sister last week because my mom is the person that will always say something. So she was, my mother used to be a physical therapist assistant in the school system. She was working with a kid. The kid was having a breakdown. My mother got down on the floor to be on his level and was waiting for him to get. She's done this. She did it for so many years. She knows what she's doing. The behaviorist happened to walk in while that was happening, went in and picked the kid up right off the floor, right in front of her. And they were just about to get to the point where the kid was going to calm down. And so my mother didn't say anything in front of the kid because that's not real useful. And she knows that her energy matters for him. So she's not going to do that. But as soon as that was over, as soon as she left that room, she went right into the behaviorist's office and was like, "You will never do that to me again. I was in control of that situation. You could have asked me if I needed help. You stepped in, you ruined it because it took him the rest of the day to calm down and I was almost there. Do not assume that you know better than me just because you have a different title than I do." And so I grew up in that sort of environment, which should make sense to you because I am the person that says something, right? Like I'm not going to let behavior like that slide. I'm not going to let that happen because I think that that's dangerous. But I think that we are the outliers. Most people don't speak up.
They do not speak up. And I know you've done episodes on psychological safety, and it's
Yeah.
such a big thing. Psychological safety is why people don't speak up, because there are cultures that will retaliate if you speak up. And they've seen it happen time and time again, so they're not going to do it. And I just recently started reading this great book by Mary C. Murphy called Cultures of Growth, which is really interesting because we've heard so much about the growth and fixed mindset. She's talking about like a growth and fixed culture within the workplace. And what I started realizing it, because I was using it for some of my training, and I realized it's like, if your organization is a desert, and there are deserts out there, then one of your goals can be to be the oasis inside.
What do you mean by
You
that when
know,
you say that? What do you mean when you say that?
being that oasis means that you can flourish, nourish, and nurture the people on your team, even though the culture itself may not support it. They may not have the resources, or they may not have the whatever you need there. So for those people that are afraid to speak up, at least they can speak up within their team, or they can find somebody to speak up to if they can go to that oasis. But so that's a real issue. And so that silence just breeds more silence and breeds more less psychological safety. So somebody can find a way. I believe that somebody can find a way to encourage that person to speak up. And that's the other part of being an oasis. You know, it's like, okay, I see this person. I see they don't feel safe. I see that they're struggling. How can I be that bridge and give them a little sprinkle of water so that they can bloom?
If they can. And so here's where I draw lines. Because when it comes to psychological safety, again, we put everything on the leader. Like if the leader creates psychological safety, it's there. If they don't, they don't. But if you have someone who grew up in a family that was not psychologically safe, they are never going to speak up in a company. I don't care how good your leader is. Like that's just not going to happen. They've never learned that they don't even know that they could or and or should self-advocate. They have no idea that that's even allowed. Like I was in 7th grade. This is so representative of who I am. You're going to die. So I was in 7th grade, and the math teacher, it was our first, I think, our first day of math class. And I had a new friend in the class. We had only known each other for the past year because we went to a new school in 6th grade. So we just barely knew each other. It's 7th grade. The teacher's doing something on the board, and the teacher was wrong. The math was incorrect. And so I told the teacher that the math was
Who is
incorrect.
she?
Correct, because it was. And the teacher started to fight back. And I looked at them and I said, You can check your work if you want, but that's wrong. And the teacher turned around and started checking the work, and they were wrong, and they fixed it. Didn't say thank you, didn't say anything, like, you know, obviously, because they were embarrassed. And I remember it was about, gosh, it must have been 15 or 20 years after that moment. This friend, who I'm still friends with, said to me, you know, the day that I realized that I wanted to be like a good friend to you, like close to you, was the day that you like said something to the math teacher in seventh grade, because that was the first time I ever heard or knew that as a child, you could speak to an adult that way. Like, you weren't rude about it. You just were like, but excuse, like, that's, you know, but, and I was correct. So we weren't going to get anywhere in that lesson if we didn't fix that problem. But the fact of the matter was, it took her, first of all, 20 years to tell me that. And second of all, if you grow up in a situation like, and most of us do, when you're in class, you're not really allowed to talk back to the teacher, like talk back. You're not allowed to correct. You're not allowed. There's a hierarchy there that says that that person is correct and you should fall in line. So a leader can create all sorts of psychological safety, but people are still not going to always take advantage of it, you know?
And it also comes back to where we were a little while ago about that self-knowledge. I mean, it's like, when you're not speaking up, I would just love to be able to invite people to look at themselves. It's like, what's going on here? Is it because I had nuns when I was growing up?
But I don't know if people even know that they're not speaking up.
Because
I think a lot of people don't even consider the fact that they can say something about a problem. Like, it doesn't even, like, they don't even think that they're not speaking up. They just know that. Here's a clue, folks. This might be you if, listeners, this could be you if you have been bitching in your mind about a problem at your company for an extended period of time and nobody knows that you're mad about it. This might be you. This might be you if you have a tendency to hint toward the solution that you know is correct without saying it fully, so that nobody can sort of take any. So this is hinting is we're very anti-hinting at Fried, and this is, I learned to not do this from my mother-in-law, who will sit in an air-conditioned room and instead of saying, could you turn the AC, you know, down or up because I'm cold, she's like, aren't you guys cold? It's like, no, we're not cold. Would you like a jacket? Do you want like, there's a million solutions. We can change the AC. We can give you socks. We can give you a sweatshirt. You want a blanket? Like, we can do, there's so many solutions. It's not just one solution, but we can't fix it if you're not saying anything and you're hinting. So if you have been frustrated about something in your workplace and you think you've said something, you probably haven't, because most people hint rather than speak.
Right. Or you've said it to the wrong person. You know, and that's where so many of the gossip comes in. You know, you've got a friend and all of a sudden you leave a meeting. I can't believe they said that. I can't stand when this happens. And you're talking to somebody who can do nothing about it. And then that person is then left with trying to solve your problem for you or just adding to it. And then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, I'm right. I'm right. This is a wrong thing. And that's as far as it goes.
Yeah. So if you're convinced you're right about something and a person that could change that something hasn't been informed clearly, calmly, concisely, kindly, then you're just kind of creating your own problem.
Yeah.
Sorry, not sorry.
And one of the frameworks that I try to get people frameworks, so that they can say it in a way that is not disagreeable.
Yeah.
You know, and that's everybody's fear. You know, I'm not going to speak up because if I speak up, I'm going to sound aggressive. I'm going to sound like a bitch. I'm going to sound angry. Then I'm going to get fired. But there are ways that you can communicate. I call it my love method. You know, you listen, you find that emotion behind it. And then you tell somebody that you understand them. You tell something that is validating, and then you can express. And I call it, it's sort of like your meat tenderizer. You give a little meat tenderizer before you express what the issue is. And it's amazing how when you tenderize somebody's meat, their cortisol level goes down and they can actually listen to you sometimes. So to really give love when you answer all those questions that Kate just put up is it something that I'm complaining about all the time? And just having validation from your friend who's complaining about it the same way is not doing anything at all, but adding poison to the toxic environment. Because the more you gossip, the more you start to believe in that gossip. And then it just, have you heard about the drama triangle? You know about the
Yeah,
drama
Kaufman's
triangle?
triangle.
Yeah. So it's like, that's what happens. You become the victim, and then you become the persecutor, and then you become the rescuer. It's like, no.
Yeah. So let's do the love framework a little more slowly because love, folks, is LUVE. This Robin's framework is LUVE, not LOVE. And let's break it down a little more slowly for people so that if they're in a situation and they're like, what do I say? How do I say this? How do I bring this up? Etc. Start with L. Listen.
Yeah. So L is for listen. You want to just not listen to the words, but you want to listen to the emotion and or the need that's not being met. So a lot of times people are screaming or yelling or doing something because they have a need that's not being met. And they are maybe frustrated, they are angry, they are hurt, they are embarrassed. And when you can sort of figure out, I mean, and you can guess at it, you don't have to be Kate. You don't have to like know exactly what that person is feeling, but you can guess on it. Okay, sounds like they may be really hurt or frustrated by what just happened. Then you say something, you know what, Kate, I totally get how frustrating this is. It sounds like you're really frustrated. I totally get it. And you are so right. It shouldn't be happening. You've understood them, you've validated their experience.
So that's L
Doesn't
for
mean that,
listen, U for understand, V for validate.
yeah, and it doesn't mean that you have to agree. Because a lot of times people think, oh, I'm validating them, that means that they're right. No, it means that you're acknowledging their point of view, which everybody appreciates, because then that makes them feel seen, makes them feel heard, makes them feel understood. So you listen to them, you understand them, you validate them. Then once that meat tenderizer is put on, then you can express what it is that you disagree with. And you can express it in the way of like, yeah, I understand you. You're absolutely right to feel that way. And of course not, but, and if we did it this way, blah, 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 blah would happen. Or, and if we did it this way, how do you think we would get to Y? So you can ask them a question. And oftentimes when you put it in a question rather than a statement, it's an opportunity for them to self-reflect. Oh, maybe they're right. I mean, just like that teacher. I mean, you could have said, I'm wondering if
Yeah, but I was 12.
I know. What to say? If
I
Kate were not 12 and she had just done the love,
don't know if
she
Kate was
might have
not
said,
Kate.
I'm wondering if you added that together, how you would get to that number. You
Because you
know, and
wouldn't,
that,
you dummy. Just kidding.
I know exactly. You're
Yeah,
supposed to be the teacher.
so listen, understand, validate, express. But as far as I understand from your framework, E has an alternate option.
Yes, that's the questioning. Explore.
Explore.
Yeah. So express means you just say the statement. Explore means to ask the question.
Yeah.
So you explore their point of view. And you can actually do both. You can express and then you can explore too,
Yeah.
which you can do that. But that's a way that you can get through saying what you need to say without being disagreeable or coming off as aggressive. Some people are still going to get defensive.
Yeah.
There's just no way around that. And that's usually something that they need to
That's their own
reflect.
stuff. Yeah. Like
Yeah.
I have an abnormal amount of shame for not if I'm doing anything imperfectly. Like if I ever missed something or did anything wrong, like I have shame through the roof like immediately. So when somebody tells me something, I can often get defensive really quickly. I will correct myself within short time. But my initial response is to be like flooded with embarrassment, flooded. And I have known this about myself for many, many years. This is not a secret to me. I have not been able to change it. I notice it. And then I like, there's all these people that are like, if you just have the awareness, then you can change. No, sometimes you just have enough awareness to say, oh, I'm doing this again so that you can repair. Like, it's not always you're going to
It's just a
avoid
trigger,
everything.
just like
Yeah. Yes. You're
No,
not
I
going to
totally.
eliminate all your triggers, right? Like that's just, or at least I don't think I am. I've been doing this work. I started meditating at 18 and I'm still a wreck, you guys. So.
No, I totally get it. And where I go with that is I don't get defensive. I get intrusively more quiet and shut down and hurt. And so I'm not going to act out. I'm not going to say you've hurt me. I'm just going to.
And there's assumptions in that too. So we're back to this assumptions idea. Because I remember once we had a conversation and you were like, yeah, but I think that maybe she doesn't like me. And I was like, what? But that was your, that pattern coming up saying like, okay, well, I've got to remove myself from this and go stay in my quiet corner because this person clearly doesn't like me anymore. When I knew for a fact that this person really loves you, doesn't just like you, like loves you as a person. And I was like, what? I was so
The
confused.
assumption.
But that's our stuff.
That is our stuff. And that's what, and also just going back even to the burnout, burnout makes you do that more.
Yes,
You know what? And
100%.
the thing is like, and going back to the soaps also, you know, so many soap characters would develop an evil twin. Now, you
Your
notice
shadow self.
when they have an evil twin, the evil twin comes out when circumstances are overwhelming. You know, so if you ever go back and watch the soaps, it's like all of a sudden they're being their nice, perky self, and somebody gets murdered, or somebody gets in trouble, or their child is taken away. What happens? The evil twin shows up because that's what how they deal with stress. They can't deal with stress internally as the character that they are, so they create an evil twin that can deal with the stress. And that's what we all do. Our evil twins can be like really maniacal and stuff, but our evil twins could be like me, just shutting down. And it's still the evil twin coming out. So you have to, and like knowing when your who your evil twin is, knowing when it might come out, and knowing what might trigger it so that you can maybe, and that's the other thing I tell leaders. It's like a lot of times people say, well, why do I have to be the one to change? Why do I have to like understand everybody? There's another alternative. You can say, look, this is my trigger. If you say this, I'm going to react like that. I have worked on it a long time, but I want you to know that it has nothing to do with you personally. It has nothing to do with how I feel at the moment. But when you come to me and blah, 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 say that, I'm going to act like you just wasted my entire life. And I might yell, I might get short, I may do this. So know that about me. That's all I can say. And so and as a leader, you have my permission to do that. And you may have to do it over and over and over and over again because you can train people how to talk to you just as importantly as people can learn how to talk to you.
And I think the example of that is it doesn't always work perfectly, right? Because if everybody just walks around and says, well, that's my trigger, too bad, deal with it, then we're creating a little bit of a mess. Like we don't want everybody to be going around doing that. However, allowing yourself as a leader to be seen as someone who is fallible, right? Like you're gonna make mistakes, you're gonna say things a certain way, you're gonna it does create a little bit of freedom. It does open up the psychological safety a little bit too to say, oh, then I don't have to be perfect all the time. Like, I don't want everybody to walk around behaving poorly all the time, but I do want you to know that sometimes you're going to behave poorly and it's more important that you repair then you avoid the behavior in the first place. Because if we could avoid bad behavior in the first place, none of us, we would not be having any of these conversations.
Exactly. And the other thing that it does and helps with psychological safety is it models self-awareness. And I feel like that's so important to share with your employees. It's like, I've done work on myself. I know what bothers me. And I open it up to you to discover what bothers you as well, when I'm doing that. So you're right. It's like, I hate that thing. It's like, oh, I'm just being my authentic self. No. No, because
No, and
that's
you can still be
not.
working on it. I'm still working on this sense of embarrassment and defensiveness. I'm still actively working on it, but working on it doesn't mean it doesn't show up. Working on it means it shows up, and then I say, oh shit, you again.
Well, an evil twin.
Yeah, I need to name her.
I know. I definitely need a name.
Definitely need a name. All right, so if there is, because I'm always talking to leaders and individual contributors, if there's a leader listening right now, what do you think is the most important thing for them to know about communication that they could take away from what we've said so far?
So far, one of the most important things is to know yourself, know that assumptions happen, try to find clarity in your communication style. And that clarity, I'm sorry, you may have to say one thing to one person differently than you say to another person. And it sounds like a lot of work, but once you get to know it, it's not that hard. It really isn't that hard. You have to learn to understand, see what's in their show Bible, what makes them tick. They all come in with their own skills and their own triggers, their own trauma, their own experiences. Find out how much, as much as you can about those experiences so that you can adapt your conversation to them. It's like one of my other frameworks is my actor type framework, so that everybody has a personality that's like an actor type. But as leaders, how we need to be Meryl Streep, and Meryl Streep can be all the things. She can be that. She can be everything because she understands the character. She takes the time to understand what the writer wants. She understand what the director wants. Understand what the character needs, and she becomes it. And as leaders, that's what we can do, is to become the Meryl Streep of leadership. What does this person need right now? What is in the show Bible? What is in the director's notes? Ah, okay. I'm going to talk to her that way, and she's going to get it. And it's going to save you time in the long run because it sounds like, oh yeah, it's a lot to know. I've got 15 people on my team. How am I supposed to know that? Well, if you've got 15 people on your team, and was it Cy Wakeman said that 2.5 hours every single week is used up in drama? No, every single day, 2.5 hours.
Two and a half
So
hours.
within that week, that's 12 and a half hours in a week that is lost to drama. So if it takes a little bit of time to get to know your team members so that you could avoid that 12 and a half hours lost time, I feel like that's time well invested.
So that's the leader component. Individual contributors, what do they need to know from this episode?
As an individual contributor, what I would love for you to understand is what part you're playing in the drama. Are you actually as fulfilled and as there as you can be? Are you playing the background player, or are you actually starring as a full character in this show? And I believe everybody can be a full, no matter what your role is, you can be a full contributing character to the play. I mean, that's an old acting adage. There are no small parts, only small players. And so whatever part you are, how can you become the star? And the way you become the star is to understand everybody who's in your cast, understand the show Bible, understand the value that you bring to the team. And we are all bringing some value. It's not just the work that you do. It's not just that, oh, I'm good at these numbers. No, there's something else. You're good at these numbers and you're also good at pulling the team together. You're good at these numbers and you're also good at building morale. You're also good at organizing things when people are just freaking out. So what value do you bring to the team and live in that value and own that value? And when it's being stepped on, show some love.
I love it. Folks, the reason that I love Robin's work so much is that I think sometimes when you are in the corporate world for a long time, you get stuck thinking about the corporate structure in a very specific way. And it doesn't allow for creative solutions because you only see one road, one way, one something. Like, it's like there's a show Bible for corporate America that we're all trying to follow. And the fact of the matter is, every company really truly is different, and we are all contributing to that show Bible over time. So what I like about this whole concept is that it gives you a new perspective in a different way to think about the same problems that might lead to new and different solutions that you haven't thought of yet because you're stuck on this awkward, weird, this is how corporate America has and has been. Corporate America is changing, folks. There's more vulnerability, there's more empathy, there's more shift happening. AI is coming in. We're going to need more humanity, not less. So I just love the way that you describe this so much because I think it provides people a little bit of freedom to talk about things in a way that's like, well, if this was a soap, this is how it would go, without sort of damaging the reputation of the company or damaging your own standing within things because you can talk about it from this different perspective. So if your company is fraught with drama, please hire Robin because she's the best. Robin, I'm so grateful for you coming today. Tell people where they can find you because I know there's a few people that listened that were like, oh my God, we need her yesterday.
I love this, Kate, and I love your perception because I think it's so true. It's like one of my highest values is creativity. If you can look at things creatively,
Yeah.
it changes everything. But people can find me on LinkedIn. That's my love fish language. And my soap opera. Oh, that's so funny. My website.
My soap opera of a
Yeah,
website.
my
Listen,
soap
we
opera is
all
like,
feel like that about our
yes.
websites.
As your workplace turns, but my
Oh
website,
my
yeah,
God, can you write a keynote that with
that
that
is my
title?
keynote.
Oh
Yeah,
my
as your
God.
workplace turns, yeah.
That's hysterical.
So I talk about all of
I
this in the
love it.
keynote, but you can
Yeah.
find it on my website, robinhatcher.com, and it is Robin with a Y, robinhatcher.com. And if you want to reach out, I'm going to give Kate a link for like just a 10-minute touch base. If you have any questions or any
Perfect.
insights or any thoughts, rags, bones, I would love to chat. Just find a time on my calendar.
All right, fried fam. Allow yourself the permission to know who you are, show up as you are, and own all the parts of yourself. Self-awareness is not self-awareness if it only knows the shitty parts. Allow the good parts to shine too. Thanks for being here. Leave us a review, share this with somebody. And we'll see you next time.